All right, thank you very much. And of course, the words are, and the performance cause us to be very reflective, as we should, of course. So thanks for adding that to us and for the work that you put into it. Now, why did they have to trek through the wilderness? This is quite an amazing story that we have. The first five books of the Bible deals with this. It starts in Genesis 12 when God deals with Abraham, and that starts the whole picture. He begins with Abraham right at the very beginning. He says, your descendants are going to go into a place where they're going to be slaves or oppressed, and then they're going to be brought out, and God was going to make them a nation. So he said that right in Genesis to Abraham, that this was going to happen. So the Exodus and the time in the wilderness had its origins way back in Genesis chapter 12. In fact, much of the Old Testament is based upon this event, that is, what God did for Israel in taking them out and bringing them through the wilderness. It's referred to over and over again, especially in reference to the covenant which God made with them at that time, which they agreed, which they broke, and continued to break. And finally, they went into captivity, and then Jesus Christ came and established a whole new covenant. So I'm saying that there is so much that goes back to this event in which, of course, has to do, again, with the days of unleavened bread. We go through some of the lessons. Many ministers are giving lessons of the journey through the wilderness. And it is a journey because it has to do with everything that we do today. We are journeying through the wilderness, as it were. Now, the observance of the days of unleavened bread, 7 days, in one sense is a microcosm as to what they were supposed to learn and understand as a result of that 7 days of unleavened bread, as to what took place in that wilderness. And so this has everything to do with the days of unleavened bread. You can't talk about the days of unleavened bread without the story of Israel in the wilderness. The story is considerable. It brings together so much of the Bible, and it has more to do with us today than perhaps we are aware of. The Apostle Paul understands this in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, a very clear and a direct reference. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, when speaking to the New Testament church, he has got to go back and talk about what took place when they came out of Egypt, and what took place not only when they came out of Egypt, but what occurred throughout the entirety of their time in the wilderness. Moreover, brethren, I do not want you to be unaware that all of our fathers were under the cloud and all passed through the sea. All were baptized into Moses and the cloud and in the sea, as it were, a time of coming out, a time of a new beginning, a time, in one sense, of being cleared and washed of the past. Everything is new as they went forward. And this is the way it was to be. And so he uses terms that you and I would use, wouldn't quite understand it, strictly in what happened to them, baptized unto Moses in the cloud and in the sea. The cloud covered them. The cloud, they were immersed in that cloud completely, and they had to be because it made it so cool to live out in terrible, terrible conditions. You've heard me describe it before. Some of you have seen it also. The wilderness is terrible. In parts of Judea, you go down to Sinai, in parts of it, not all parts, but it's terrible. And they call it a wilderness because nobody lives there, or very few people live there. It cannot sustain a lot of people. And here now you had 2 million plus, perhaps, The figure, of course, is quite debatable, but a minimum of 2 million people out there in the wilderness, a city larger than the city of Brisbane, wandering around in the wilderness. Now, this is quite a feat, but yet this is what happened. All ate the same spiritual food. The spiritual food meaning in two ways. One, it came from God, directly given to them by God. But it was also spiritual food in the sense that they were spiritually sustained by what God was telling them in his word as he was revealing it to Moses. All drank the same spiritual drink, for they drank of that spiritual rock that followed them, and that rock was Christ. So it does identify here what does it mean by spiritual drink and spiritual food. Verse 5, but with most of them, God was not well pleased, for their bodies were scattered in the wilderness. He was not pleased about this. It didn't make him happy. No happiness in this whatsoever. His intentions were for them to leave, indeed to go through the wilderness, but to make it, not to die out there, not to disqualify themselves from going in. That was never his intentions. So what was the reason for the wilderness? There is a reason for it, as we're going to see as we develop this idea. Now these things became our examples, to the intent that we should not lust after evil things as they also lusted. So we can read this, and we can say, well, yes, this is an example. And you don't do what they did. You don't lust after evil things as they also lusted. This is rather interesting here, because we tend to think, well, we live in a pretty bad world today. We tend to think the people of Corinth lived in a bad world. They did. They lived in it was a horrible debauchery of a place in terms of what went on there. And so Paul is trying to help them to understand you don't go and commit idolatry. You don't commit fornication. You don't get involved in the practices and the ideas and the values that just keep coming forth all the time from the world in which they lived. We live today in the same kind of a world. I'll read that to you in a little bit. In some ways it's worse, but it was bad enough. But what we need to understand is this: what is the source? Okay, so you're out here in the wilderness. You don't have television. Okay, I think you're starting to get the point here. What is there to tempt them? The first thing that comes along, they were tempted. They just went after it. And they didn't seem, and it says they lusted. Folks, you can lust in the wilderness. You don't need a porn site. You can lust out on the wilderness. Where does it come from? It comes from what's inside your own heart. This is where it comes from. And of course, the observance of the days of unleavened bread has to do with cleaning up leaven that is in our heart. Some people, and I appreciate your practice, you get into, the finer bits of the carpet. Don't forget the toaster. You don't forget searching for leaven all over the place. Now, you might say, well, we don't have to do that. It's not all that necessary. That's an Old Testament thing. That's just sort of a physical thing. It is indicative not only of your character and integrity, it's indicative to God as to how sincere and earnest you are in wanting to deal with sin in your life, no matter how small and minute it is, because it develops, it grows, and it's able to be tempted. You got a seed there. That seed, under the right conditions, can grow, can develop into a full-grown plant, spread more seeds. And pretty soon it takes over your mind, takes over your heart, and you're in pretty bad shape. God says, I want you to deal with sin this way, this way. You treat it as leaven that you get out of your house. And you don't allow anything there that that is like leaven. Now, we do have that tradition in the church where you clean out your houses and you search for it and you toss the stuff out. Say, well, it was a box of yeast I just bought. We throw it out. It's symbolic of something. Right then and there, it is symbolic of something. But it does show. It shows to yourself. It shows to God that you are really deeply interested in the smaller, minuter areas in our lives that can sprout up at any time. Lust can happen not just in front of a TV set, not in front of a porn site, not in front of a girly magazine, not just with the sins of Sodom and Gomorrah that surround us, but in the wilderness. Notice that. Which shows you that while there is enticements, the source comes from within. It's a spiritual matter. You deal with it in that way. They are our examples. It's interesting, everything that took place to the Israelites, especially in their exodus, walking, going through the wilderness, became our examples. Let's go on. And do not become idolaters, as were some of them. As it is written, the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Once again, no rock bands around. No, let's go out to the club. Or what? Nothing like this was there. I don't know where they got their booze from, but it doesn't take very long to get it. If you understand the fermentation processes. And you can make it just about out of anything. And so Moses is up there for 40 days. He doesn't quite come down at a certain time whenever they expect it. And they became an idolater very, very quickly. Created a golden calf. Sat down to eat and drink, rose up to play. In the wilderness. Nor let us commit sexual more immorality, as some of them did. That's fornication. As is in the New King, the Authorized Version has it. And that's pretty much what it was. As some of them did, in one day 73,000 fell. That's when they were kind of bypassing the orbit of the Moabites, and they sort of got involved with some of their villages, and some of the men went over, and they was having such a good time, and then they decided to go and worship Baal while they were having a good time, which was a part of Baal worship. And God says, I'm dealing with it. And he did. Neither let us tempt Christ, as some of them also tempted and were destroyed by serpents. That's pretty bad. They tempted Christ. I'm going to return to that. That's in Psalm 78. Don't leave 1 Corinthians 10 here. I just want to go to Psalm 78. You have very long psalms, Psalm 78, Psalm 105, for instance, that deals with the Exodus and the trek through the wilderness and the experiences of God with him in the wilderness. Here's a very long psalm here. How often they provoked him in the wilderness and grieved him in the desert. Yea, again and again they tempted God and limited the Holy One of Israel. They did not remember his power, the day when he remembered them, when he redeemed them from the enemy, when he worked his signs in Egypt and his wonders in the field of Zoan, which is where they were up in the northern part of Egypt. It's called Zoan. And so he turned the rivers into blood and their streams. They couldn't drink, etc. And so all of that took place. But they tempted God. What did they tempt God? What was God disturbed about? Verse 19, let's go back to verse 19. It says, yes, they spoke against God. They said, can God prepare a table in the wilderness? It wasn't a matter that they needed food. This wasn't the issue. It wasn't a matter that, look, we're running out of food, we really need food. It's just that now you're in a really pretty raunchy attitude toward God. Can God do this? God let us out here to die. That was said. You know how many times that was said? I hesitate to count. Well, it'd be better if we'd died in Egypt. We've got to be a little bit careful. If there's another place you want to go, folks, I guarantee you, you'll go. Just a matter of time. Better be careful what you say and be careful how you feel. I'm not saying thoughts haven't occurred. Well, what am I doing here? Look, you can't leave or you can't depart from the living God. And you can't speak against him. Can God prepare a table in the wilderness? Behold, he struck the rock so that the waters gushed out and the streams overflowed. And can he give bread also? Can he provide meat for his people? And when the Lord heard this, he was furious. And a fire was kindled against Jacob. And anger also came up against Israel because they did not believe God. That was the problem. Why are they not going to enter in? Because they didn't have their, it wasn't mixed with faith. They did not go in because of unbelief. Can you make a mistake? Yes. We're talking about here a serious lack of belief. It says they did not trust in his salvation, yet he commanded the clouds above. He opened the doors of heaven. He rained down manna for them to eat. God's providing for you every day. He's providing for you every day. We've already had that thought today in our services that was mentioned in the sermonette, how much God provides for us and what he gives to us. And you've got it all around you, as they did with the manna. He gave them the bread of heaven. Men ate angels' food. It's the way David wants to put it. And he sent them food to the full. And yet, while all of this was around them, and so clear, so obvious as to what God was doing, you turn and you say this about God? And you expect him to be real friendly and happy. Okay, that's all right. You can say whatever you want to. I'm a big, kind sort of a guy. You can just say whatever you want to. We'll be happy about that. And not do anything? Look, God was going to send his son to die to help us to understand some things that we could never have understood any other way. True. But to help us to understand some things, it was for us, He didn't do it for himself. It was what he was doing for us. And then to not look around and see everything that God has provided for us, can you see how God had a problem with that? Now, it says here, go back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. It didn't say, he wasn't just on about what they did in tempting God. Paul says this, verse 9, 1 Corinthians 10, nor let us tempt Christ, is what he says. So, how might one apply this? Well, there is an application. I think I've already alluded to that. Jesus Christ was as much as desirous for the joy that was set before him, it says, to come down to this earth, to become a man, to become human, and to live life, divest himself of his privileges, and what do we do? Well, his gracious love and mercy that we are surrounded with is forgotten. What did they do? As they came out of Egypt, they forgot his works. They forgot it. Feast of Unleavened Bread is a stark reminder that we can't make it on our own. and we're not going to make it on our own. And once you step out into the wilderness, if you're on your own, you'll die. Don't try it. Stay in Egypt. Become a part of Egypt. But if you're going to step out, don't do it on your own. You're going to have somebody with you. And he tells us how he was with them, with the cloud, with the fire by night, with the manna, with the spiritual drink and the literal drink that he gave them. And he was with them. Try it on your own, and you'll fall in the wilderness. Unfortunately, it's been done. Verse 10, nor complain, as some of them also complained and were destroyed by the destroyer. You know, we all have needs. We all have legitimate needs. But if we're going to do it in this way, once again, it shows an attitude toward everything God has already done for us. And he takes it quite seriously, because you see, once you go that far, what kind of redemption is there from that? I think we need to think about this. You go too far sometimes, and you can't redeem a person from that. It is almost like it's a deliberate thing. Once you've seen certain things, once you've experienced certain things, once you know that, and then to complain in the sense that he means it here. Oh, everybody complains. Of course you do. One of these days we're going to have to talk to you about complaining and what it means and how to stop it and what you can do. Those are small complaints. Everybody does that. This is more than that. Now, all these things happened to them as examples, and they were written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the ages have come. We're at the end of the ages, not just the age. We are at the end of a major age in the church, but there were ages before then. And all of it has what has happened before, the time prior to Noah, the time prior to Adam. Those ages back then have all come down to where you and I are right now. And he wants to say, you don't want to fall in the wilderness. Doesn't matter, folks, if you fall just a short distance from it or way back in the early stages. Doesn't matter. You still fall. You got to go all the way through. Now, here's what he's telling us about. It is a journey. So we try to understand the picture here about the wilderness. Let me make a couple of points here. Number one, in the wilderness and bringing them out, he dealt with them as a congregation or a church. Acts 7, verse 38. Acts 7, 38. This is recognized by Stephen. It was recognized by Paul, though not, let's say, specifically said. It implies all of this. He deals with them as a congregation or a church. The word is ecclesia. This is he that was in the church, and I'm reading from the authorized version here, in the church in the wilderness with the angel which spake to him in Mount Sinai, and with our fathers who received the lively or the living oracles, the living word to give to us. Individually, each person was responsible, but they were the church in the wilderness, the congregation in the wilderness, as it says in the King James or New King James. And if they were going to make it, they were going to make it together, not straggle in individually in the promised land. I don't know why we tend to think sometimes, well, I'll just be an independent Christian. No such thing as an independent Christian. Once again, that thought, that idea has already been expressed today in the sermonette. You got to be a part of something. You can't just run out and say, well, I'll do it on my own. Well, what good does that do? You don't work out your problems. You don't work out your issues. There are no ethical issues with other people that makes you hold to a certain standard that other people would expect you to do. Nothing like this ever takes place. There's no doing good to anybody, as we've all heard. Why, you know, that just goes out the window. Well, so what are we doing on our own? Well, I'm keeping the Sabbath and holy days, and I'll tithe, but don't ask me to be a part of a group because I don't like to be told what to do. You know when you're told what to do? When you're hurting yourself or you're hurting somebody else. Then you'll get told what to do. Other than that, we're not telling you what to do. Okay? But don't hurt somebody else. And if you start to hurt yourself where somebody else has to step in and to help you, yeah, it could get a little bit like telling you what to do. I hear that all the time. I don't want anybody to tell me what to do. Okay. As my wife knows, nobody's ever told me what to do. Oh, they've tried. But I'm sorry, but so far as trying to be overbearing and trying to simply put you in a box or something like that, who's going to do that? Can you do it anyway? I don't think so. And they can't do it to me. And I hope nobody can do it to you. So that's got nothing to do with it. But you're not going to straggle in one by one. There was a situation where when they were told they couldn't go into the promised land, he was going to send them out for 38 more years to wander in the wilderness. They elected some leaders and decided to go in. And he says, if you strike out on your own and you go in, you're going to die. You don't understand. You can't go in on your own and take over the land. And so they said, yes, now we can do it. Now they're convinced they could do it. Well, they didn't like the alternative of wandering for 38 more years in the wilderness. And so they went, killed to a man. Not nice people there. Now, God knew that. Moses knew that. Joshua knew that. They all knew that. When it says they murmured as a congregation. When they committed sexual immorality, it was done by a lot of people. When they tempted God, you got a lot of people doing that. In fact, when it came time to enter into the promised land, there was only two of them who didn't do this. That is, who were responsible. God had different reasons for not allowing Moses to go in, or Aaron. That's a different matter. But Joshua and Caleb were destined to go in. And as a matter of fact, they were all destined. He wanted them all to go in right then and there. So when they were really accusing God at that time as to what God was doing, they did it as a group. They did it as a group. God dealt with them as a group. You might say, well, it's awful hard to work in a group. Yes, it is. I'll be the first one to tell you that. It really is hard to work with a larger group of people. Look at any democracy trying to get people together. Not a dictatorship. Look at India, you try to get, everybody has to become a part of it. And the only way it's going to work is if you have everybody individually is prepared to consider their ethical duty toward everybody else, as well as toward God, of course. And, you know, they're a part of this. We have a code of ethics, and the code of ethics is not just, it's not a legal document. I'm talking about within the ministry and within the council of elders, for that matter. It's to reassure each other that we're going to do certain things. A lot of people probably will disregard it if they decide to do something because it's not a legal issue. It's just a reassurance. So we have a responsibility toward other people. than in what we do. We can't get away from that. That's simply the nature of the game. So it was done. Their sins were collective. And it seems like when a church goes a certain way, it seems to simply go in a certain way. So this is why Paul instructed the person who was openly committing fornication to be put out of the church. That is commonly, not openly, but commonly. Simply because a little leaven leavens the whole lump. It's just the way it works. And he says, we've got to think of the group as a whole. Second point, there is a wilderness we have to go through. It's a hostile wilderness. It's not conducive. It's not a conducive environment to assisting you to get where you need to go. It stops you cold. You walk into the wilderness and you wonder, where in the world are we going to go now? You don't know where to go. You don't know where your food's going to come from. You don't know where your sustenance is going to come from. How can I make it? What is this wilderness we're talking about here? The wilderness is where there is very little to sustain a person. Not a lot of people can live in the wilderness. Simply not enough there. And so too, the kind of wilderness that John preached has little truth. It speaks of a voice in the wilderness. So how should we understand a wilderness? Matthew chapter 3, verses 1 through 3. In those days, John the Baptist came preaching in the wilderness of Judea and saying, repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand. For this is he who was spoken of by the prophet Isaiah, saying, the voice of one crying in the wilderness, prepare the way of the Lord, make his paths straight. John was a voice crying out in the wilderness. What kind of a wilderness? The world in which John preached. Even though there was a highly developed religious culture among the Jews, there was a dearth of truth. People that people could really rely on. Wasn't a lot of truth. John would tell people straight up how they were living and that they needed to change and how they needed to repent. And when the Pharisees and the scribes came to be baptized, he says, who sent you, you brood of vipers? And he wouldn't baptize those people. So we have it's a spiritual wilderness that you and I have to make our way in. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 9:36, Matthew 9:36, just over a few pages. And when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep, having no shepherd. Where do I go? Where do I get fed? Where can I receive help? How do I know what to do? He said, look at them. They languish. They're going nowhere. They're doing nothing. They don't know what to do. And these people who claim to be their shepherds do nothing more than feed themselves. As he took on the Pharisees, who claimed righteousness, who claimed authority to know the word of God. We're not helping these people. And Jesus came along and began to help them. He began to show them the right way. And he began to heal them. The power of God wasn't with those people. It simply wasn't there. Pharisees and other religious group were supposed to be those kinds of shepherds. But they were hypocrites and sinners, as Christ called them, blind guides. It was a spiritual wilderness that John began to preach a gospel, a truth, began to talk about God's commandments, telling them to repent. And those people never thought they had to repent of one thing. And he told them so. The spiritual wilderness, it's a terrible thing. You know, the Bible speaks of a time, Isaiah 35, verse 1. We normally read this during the Feast of Tabernacles, but it helps us to understand the difference between a parched desert with little water, which is symbolic of the fact that there is simply no truth. It's just not there. You can't be spiritually sustained. Isaiah 35. The wilderness and the solitary place shall be glad for them, and the desert shall rejoice and blossom as the rose. It shall blossom abundantly and rejoice even with joy and singing. The glory of Lebanon shall be given to it, the excellency of Carmel and Sharon. They shall see the glory of the Lord and the excellency of our God. Strengthen you the weak hands and confirm the feeble knees. People are going to be strengthened because of what will be there. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance, even God with a recompense, and he will come and save you. Israel couldn't see this. But he speaks of a time when there won't be a wilderness in the world tomorrow. It's not going to be there. It'll all be productive. The eyes of the blind shall be opened. The ears of the deaf shall be unstopped. Then the lame man leap as a hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert. The parched ground shall become a pool, and the thirsty land springs of water, and the habitation of dragons, where each lay, shall be grass with reeds and rushes. A highway shall be there, as he says, a way, and it shall be called the way of holiness. The unclean shall not pass over it. But it shall be those, the wayfaring men, though fools, shall not err therein. No lion shall be there, nor ravenous beast shall go up thereon, and it shall not be found there. But the redeemed shall walk there. Well, what a wonderful picture of a time when, you go back to Isaiah chapter 11, verse 9, it's not going to be a wilderness anymore. It's going to be a land and a place and a time of plenty. Isaiah 11, 9, it shall come to pass in that day that the Lord shall set his hand. I'm reading from verse 11. Verse 9. 11, 9. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. No more lack of knowledge. It's going to be there. It's what's going to help people. It's going to give them guidance. It's going to give them encouragement. They're going to know which way to go. Their teachers will not be removed anymore. They'll be out there saying, okay, here's the way to go. The shepherds will be there, not out for themselves, not trying to feed themselves and completely ignoring other people, but able to help people and give them truth, give them hope. We live today in a world of spiritual wickedness, a wilderness rather, a world that cannot lead you into the truth, whose values are the opposite to do what God says you ought to be. And there are traps and there are tests everywhere, plenty of dangers. In the end time, Paul tells Timothy, chapter 3 and verse 1, 2 Timothy 3 and verse 1, he's telling Timothy this, but know this, that in the last days perilous times will come. For men will be lovers of themselves, lovers of money, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy. You talk about a wilderness? Unloving, unforgiving, slanderers, without self-control, brutal, despisers of good, traitors, headstrong, haughty, lovers of pleasure rather than lovers of God, having a form of godliness but denying its power, and from such people turn away. This today in which we live is a spiritual wilderness with danger so bad it will suck you right into it and you won't know yourself anymore. You won't know where you're at if you get drawn into this world. And there's plenty of traps out there. This is the wilderness that we're in today. This is the wilderness. We have to walk through this wilderness. We have to make our way in this wilderness and be surrounded, as it were, by those, by this, these conditions. So, I simply want you to get the picture. We're in the wilderness, folks. That's where we are. We're not in the land of plenty. We're not in a desert that's blossoming as the rose. It's just not there. When it comes to truth, when it comes to values, when it comes to purpose, when it comes to understanding why you're here and where you're going, when it comes to good, solid leadership amongst the people, this is a wilderness. You do not want to be in the world under those conditions. How many of you saw the debate the other day between Richard Dawkins and Cardinal Pell? No, let me see your hands. Really, how many did you see it? Let me see it. You should have seen it. You should have seen it. It would have helped you to understand we don't have leadership. We don't have leadership. Here's a man who's supposed to be giving good, solid answers to counter the person who doesn't believe in a God, believes in evolution, and claims to have his values figured out through some means, I don't know how, and another person who's supposed to get his values from God, couldn't give good answers. I'm very disappointed. I think most of you could have done better against the great intellect of the day, Richard Dawkins. A lot of you could have done very well. He used a lot of circular and then uncircular reasoning. So I listened to him. I said, yeah, I've heard this before. I said, a lot of us could use it against him, for that matter, because the same thing applies. Well, anyway, I don't want to get into the particular arguments that were used. I'm very disappointed in the great chief religionists of our country, as it were. Made a couple of good points, but then he really got off after a while. And I think he was catering in some sense, in some way, to people. But that's not what people wanted. They wanted to hear truth in the face of arguments. They wanted to hear the truth. And they were disappointed. I was. Now, here are the dangers then. And he tells Timothy the kind of a leader he needs to be. Paul says, I endured persecutions and afflictions. You understand what I went through. He's saying this in the same context here. Paul is saying, we live, Timothy, in the wilderness. Let's make the point, Timothy. Let's don't kid ourselves. We live in the wilderness. There are dangers everywhere. God has not removed us from the world. You have to live in the world, but be not of the world. John 17, here's what Jesus said. John 17, verse 14. I have given them your word. John 17, 14. I've given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world. Excuse me. Just as I am not of the world, I do not pray that you should take them out of the world, but that you should keep them from the evil one. No, we're in the wilderness. It wasn't Jesus' intent to take us out of the world, just to be kept from the evil. Plenty of it around. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Jesus didn't give in one bit to even the religionists of the day, to the politics of the day, to the popularism of the day. He never gave in to any of it because he knew where he stood. He knew what he represented. He was indeed a true shepherd who could lead his people. He says, now I'm praying that you should keep them from the evil one. They are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. Sanctify them by your truth. Your word is truth. Where we're going to get truth? There's only one place you're going to get truth. As you have sent me into the world, I also have sent them into the world. No escaping the wilderness. I've sent them into the world. And for their sakes, I sanctify myself, that they also may be sanctified by the truth. You got the truth. You keep searching for the truth. You don't complain that you don't have it. You search for it. You ask. You knock. And you seek. Okay. You're protected. You've got truth. You begin to kid yourself. You say, I don't need to do this. I don't need to believe this. The world's not that bad. And you start compromising. You start making excuses. And you give it in. Folks, you're wandering off into the desert. There's not a lot out there. Now we have to live in the world. And the ruler of the wilderness is the devil. And Jesus prayed, however, that we should be kept from him. And alternatively, kept in the name of the Father. That's whose name that we are kept in. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 1. We see a few more points here about the wilderness. Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 1. And this entire chapter, which I will go through and make the points as briefly as I can, but it makes the point itself, I think, as you'll see here. Every commandment which I command you today, you must be careful to observe. That's a positive thing. That you may live and multiply and go in and possess the land of which the Lord swore to your fathers. Here is what he wanted all along. Right at the beginning, he states the premise, states the idea. I want you to go in and take this land that I've been promising you. Verse 2. And you shall remember that the Lord your God led you all the way these 40 years in the wilderness to humble you and test you, to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. And what did he find out? They weren't prepared to. So, and he was going to keep his promise, but he sort of also knew what he was getting to. And it is true. They did forsake him. They forsook the covenant. But they had to be tested. Testing good? Yes. Everybody's tested or tried, as it were. Why? Because that's what tells what's in your heart. This is when if you're going to stick with it, it's going to have the going is going to have to be a little bit tough. You have to go through the wilderness. There is no exceptions. You have to go through the wilderness. Everybody is prepared in the wilderness. Moses was prepared not in a city. But when he led the people of God, he was himself 40 years out with about as few people and more sheep than you ever want to know. John the Baptist came out of the wilderness. He was prepared there. Elijah came from about the most obscure place there was, totally unheard of, not in the capitals of the time. Paul the Apostle had to go into the wilderness of Arabia to be trained personally by Christ. Nobody's exempt from the wilderness. We all go there. Jesus went into the wilderness 40 days, 40 nights. Yeah, not a lot there. And especially if you don't eat or drink, as it says, it's a lot less that's there. So he humbled you. If we start to get the idea we can make it, if we start to get the idea of who we think we are, we're not going to make it. He says he humbled you, he allowed you to hunger, and fed you. Two things. He allowed you to hunger, and he fed you. Not just one, two things here. And he fed you with manna, which you did not know, nor did your fathers know, that he might make you know that man does not live by bread alone, but man lives by every word that proceeds from the mouth of the Lord. In the wilderness of this world, that's what we have to know. We have to learn that we live by the word of God. The debate I saw the other day, if you didn't see it, drives it home. Folks, there's only one place you can go. And men do not have the answers. They simply do not. Jesus said, John 6, verse 31 through 35. We're coming back to Deuteronomy 8, so don't lose it. I just want to just interject this idea. He says, I am the bread of life. Our fathers ate manna in the desert. It, as it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Verse 32. Then Jesus said to them, most assuredly I say to you, Moses did not give you bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. And then they said to him, Lord, give us this bread always. And Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger, and he who believes in me shall never thirst. If you live in this world, that's the only thing that's going to get you through. And whenever you eat the unleavened bread for 7 days, you symbolize the fact you have to live by Jesus Christ. Paul said that the life that I live by Jesus Christ, who gave himself for me. I live by the faith in the Son of God. That's all you've got. Jesus, they said to him, Lord, give us this bread always. And Jesus said to them, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger. He who believes in me will never thirst. So you have to have the word, and you have to have God's Spirit. Your garments, chapter 8, Deuteronomy, verse 4. Deuteronomy 8, verse 4. Your garments did not wear out on you, nor did your foot swell these 40 years. Are you going to be looked after? Yes, you will. You'll get what you need. Maybe not what you want, but you'll get what you need. You should know in your heart, as a man chastens his son, so the Lord chastens you. Here he says it again. Therefore you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God to walk in his ways and fear him. How does he know this? By a simple statement of profession. He doesn't. He doesn't know anything. He knows it once you go through it. Hopefully you'll know it. Therefore you shall keep the commandments of the Lord your God and walk in his ways and not fear him. For the Lord your God is bringing you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, fountains and springs, and flow out of valleys and hills. And that's equivalent to the kingdom of God. It's where we're headed. And he's got to know. He's got to know what's in your heart. See, they were in the wilderness and still lusted. They were in the wilderness and still complained. I mean, they got in bad attitudes, just as if they were right out there in the middle of a debauched, deranged society. It's all the same. But he's got to know what's in your heart, because that's where it all starts. And he says, I'm not letting anybody in the kingdom of God with this kind of an attitude. So their carcasses fell in the wilderness. Deuteronomy chapter 8, he says, so I tested you. I had to prove you. He says in verse 16, I fed you in the wilderness with manna, which your fathers did not know, that he might humble you. That is, make you have to rely on him. Humble you that he might test you to do you good in the end. And then you say in your heart, my power and the might of my hand have gained me this wealth. This is what he's trying to avoid. He does not want you to say this. He wants you to work hard. He wants you to do the best you can. But he does not want you to say that. And you can't have this in the kingdom of God. You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he swore to your fathers as it is this day. God is a God of his word and of his covenant. And it shall be, if you by any means forget the Lord your God and follow other gods and serve them and worship them, I testify against you this day that you shall surely perish. And some have done this. In the wilderness, they didn't make it. God's not pleased. He's not happy with that. Hebrews chapter 4, verse 1. Let's just go straight to verse 2 here. For indeed the gospel was preached to us as well as to them, but the word which they heard did not profit them, not being mixed with faith in those who heard it. Now, I said this last time, and I want to say it again, that you don't even take the first step into the wilderness without faith. And that's what happened when they went into the wilderness, when they went through the Red Sea by faith. Let's go to Exodus chapter 14, verses 13 through 15. Exodus 14, beginning with verse 13, and Moses said to the people, do not be afraid, stand still, see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. They were the oppressors. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. And the Lord said to Moses, why do you cry to me? Okay, the time of crying out to me is over. Get moving. Tell the children of Israel to go forward. And when they went forward, they went to through the Red Sea, and guess where they wound up? In the wilderness. Chapter 15, verse 22. So Moses brought Israel from the Red Sea. Exodus 15, 22. Then they went out into the wilderness of Shur. Stepped right off the bank, and they were headed into the wilderness. And they went 3 days in the wilderness and found no water. And we have a story here. And it says there, he tested them. He tested them in verse 22. And God says, I'll give you rivers of living water. God tells the woman at the well, he says, I've got water to drink that you've never heard of. And he says, whoever drinks of this water will not thirst. That's the water I'll give you. But the water that I give the person, if he truly drinks of it, it will become like a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. Now, that's real water. If you live in the wilderness, that's the kind of water you have to drink. If you live in the spiritual wilderness, that's the kind of bread that you have to eat. Chapter 16, verse 1, they journeyed from Elim, where God made the water pure for them to drink. And the congregation of the children of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin. Now we got, or Sin is what it really is. That means sin like transgression, but that's just the name. Came to the wilderness of Sin. Now another wilderness, which is between Elim and Sinai. And on the 15th day of the second month after they departed from the land of Egypt, then the whole congregation of the children of Israel complained against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said to them, "Oh, that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, and where we ate bread to the full, and you have brought us out of this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and people shall go out and gather a certain quota every day, that I may test them whether they will walk in my law or not." Now, let me just tell you what's happening here in conclusion, because this is not hard to figure out. The complaint is one thing. Okay. They didn't have any food. He said it would be better if they simply asked in the way Jesus said, "Ask and it will be given to you. Knock and it will be open. Seek and you shall find." That kind of asking. A lot better. That's a lot better than what they were doing. Okay, he said, "Now I'm going to show them that this is just a wrong approach." So he gave them food. He tested them. He put the food out there on the ground. Do it for 6 days. Not seventh. Do it for 6 days. What did they do? And don't gather twice as much. You know, whatever. He had certain rules here. He says, "I'll take care of it." All right. Now, they didn't do it. So he showed they had a heart, really, in them not to obey. Right from the very beginning, he's trying to help them to understand. He says, "I'll test them whether they're going to walk in my law or not." Complaining? It's one thing. Now, their real attitude in the complaining was this: they're really not going to walk in my law. Now, they need to understand this. The wilderness is a terrible thing. It does terrible things to you. We live in this. We're not going to get away from it. The last 2 points I wanted to make to you is that he feeds them. He feeds them. He supplies everything they need, water and food. He guides them. Number 4, he never relinquishes his promise for them to get into the promised land. He never goes back on that. That's what he says. And any testing is for their own good, that when they come into the land, they're going to really truly be able to inherit it, and it will be a blessing to them. Not one in which they're going to continue with a pretty bad heart and find out that, God might say, "Well, I made a mistake." Let me just tell you something. God's not making mistakes. He's not making mistakes with you or me or anybody else. He won't be doing that. Now, he wants you to make it. And if you fall, he is going to be unhappy, more displeased and unhappy than you. Grieved, I think, is the word. It would be terrible for him if you did that. It's not his intent. But you can't be taken out of the wilderness. Now, that's just a fact of the matter. We got to walk through it. We got to live in it. I got to put up with a lot of stuff. It was a howling wilderness. So do you, and so do your children, and so do your families. Yes, you do. But you learn. And we can't walk away from the test. We can't walk away from the learning process that he gives. So when we eat unleavened bread, he's teaching us something all the while. Let's learn the lesson, brethren. Let's keep that in mind for the rest of the year. Thank you very much for coming this morning. and stick around for hear Uncle Alan. When he gets up and speaks, he'll have a few things to say. And tomorrow, Uncle Drew will be speaking. And I'll see you the following week.